Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. And if you have something to say and would like to be featured on the network, please visit speakuptalkradio.com for all of the details or contact us at pr@speakuptalkradio.com. Well, right now, I have a best-selling author with me. She is Kat Martin. Kat is a graduate of the University of California at Santa Barbara, where she majored in anthropology and also studied history. Currently residing with her Western author husband, L.J. Martin, in Missoula, Montana, Kat has written 68 historical and contemporary romantic suspense novels. More than 16 million copies of her books are in print, and she has been published in 24 countries. Her last novel, Into the Firestorm, took the number 7 spot on the New York Times bestseller list. This will be the 15th novel in a row to be included on that prestigious list. And Kat is currently at work on her next romantic suspense. And I'm somewhat in suspense, wondering how she does all of this. So let's bring her on. Welcome to the network, Kat.
Thanks, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my. It's my pleasure. You are quite a prolific and successful writer, and your husband is as well. So before we dig into your books, what is it like for two serious writers to live and work together?
Well, fortunately, we live in Montana, so you know when you live up here, you've got lots of peace and quiet. We also have a big house, which we built ourselves, and so keeping that, we were already writing at that time, so we built our own offices. So he has his office, and I have my office, and it really gives us plenty of separation. Then we have our personal assistant sits in the middle office, so we've got room. So that's the good news. So it's not bad, and it's, you know, the good side of it is when you have mutual friends. So that's a real plus, I think.
Sure, and at the end of the day, you could come together, have a glass of wine, and say, ah, how was your writing day, yes?
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of our plan every day.
Somehow I guess that. And now you and he wrote a book together.
We did many, many years ago. In fact, people keep buying it, and they always say, it doesn't really sound like either one of us. One of the things I learned about writing with a partner, because I've only done it one time with him, is you come out with a third voice. You don't sound like him, and you don't sound like you. You sound like this weird mix in between. But this was kind of a comedy, so it was a Western comedy, and the agents wanted it. So one of our agents back in the day came up with this idea of a moonlighting, which was a big TV series at the time, set in the West, where the girl would be constantly battling this guy over whatever. So we ended up writing this book, Ten Angel, which is about a Boston girl from about 18 years old inherits half an interest in a whorehouse on the Barbary Coast. That's San Francisco back in the day in the Western time. So it was funny. It was a funny story.
Oh, my. What a good time that must have been.
Yeah, we did okay. Larry always says we fought over commas, but really, I didn't mind it. I thought it was kind of it was a really interesting experience. I'm glad I did it. I kind of wanted to do another one, and he said, no way, I'm not doing it. So
I just got some crazy image of people going to counseling, as couple counseling, like, what do you fight about? Oh, commas.
Yeah, really. We do fight about grammar sometimes, although we've both gotten better and worse. I mean, I used to have perfect spelling, and now I don't have perfect spelling anymore, because I've written over a million words. I mean, millions of words. Mm-hmm. And so I think you just start, I don't know what makes you start to forget words that you used to know, but something. But my grammar's pretty good. I've always had pretty good grammar. So.
Oh, I love it. Well, now, your most recent book, Beyond Reason, is in your new Texas trilogy, and it just hit the shelves in May, at the end of the month, and is already on the bestseller list. So tell us about that book.
Yeah, it's been on for 4 weeks. I'm really excited about that. I love this book. I actually think when I was writing it, I had this concept about this big, powerful man who was very wealthy. I hadn't ever really written I probably have if I look back in those books, but I don't think I've written anybody as wealthy as this guy was. So he was extremely wealthy, and he was 6'5", and he came from a bad background. That's what I liked about the character, and I have a tendency to start my story. If a character comes, it could be a woman, but in this case it was a man, but it can be a woman or a man, somebody of the two, you know, the pair, because I write romantic suspense. One of them comes in my head, you know, and he or she has got something that is special. And then the story kind of comes out of that. So this guy was came in my head, this millionaire who came from a really bad background. mean, you know, he was arrested, thrown in prison for a couple of years, and got out, and because of some of the things that he was able, he had a friend that had a lot of money, so he becomes a wealthy man. He's very good at his job and all that stuff, but so it was a story about him getting involved with a woman. He was a trucker. That was a different spin on it for me, you know. He was in the trucking industry. Of course, he was in full transportation industry by the time he was that rich. But the girl inherits a trucking company, so from her grandfather, and that's how they meet. And it's but there's a murder, of course, right off. I mean, she's in the graveyard from a guy that's murdered. One of her truck drivers is murdered, and they don't know what happened, and that starts the story off. And he's involved because he's made a promise to her grandfather that he would, who has obviously died, that he would look out for her. He owed the grandfather from a past thing that had happened in his younger years. So anyway, that's how they meet, and then the story just gets more and more complicated from there. And so it really turned out to be one of my better books, I think.
You know, as you're speaking about them, they sound like real people that you're just telling me about, and it's just so interesting to me how these characters are nowhere one day, and then they come into your mind, and they become full-fledged relationships with you as the author.
Yeah, I have a tendency to write forward. I don't even know if it's most, but I would say romantic suspense writers generally write backward. That means that they know all of the little intricacies about these people, and they tell them during the course of the book. They tell about their high school days and their childhood and all this stuff. And I don't do that unless it's really important. I tend to go forward. Like, they meet, there's a problem, and how you know their character, what kind of a person they are, by how they comport themselves from the time that from the opening of the book until the end of the book. It's really not too much about the past. In this case, it had more because he wouldn't have ever met her if it hadn't been for her grandfather. So there was probably more back character development. That's the only time I do it, is if it's crucial to the plot, which it is, mm-hmm. in this book, mm-hmm. then I have a tendency to go backward. But I don't tend to write. I have one of the things that drives me crazy is a lot of romance authors, and some of the very biggest ones, they do the same thing every time. The girl is in high school. She leaves. She falls in love with a guy. She leaves for 10 years. It doesn't work out right. They leave for 10 years. Then she comes back 10 years later, and the story picks up then. Well, the reason they do that is they don't want to have to develop the romantic mm-hmm. interest, which is difficult. I find that's the best part. But they don't want to deal with that. They want them to already know everything about each other. Well, anyway, they get to tell all the backstories and the whole thing, and they spend most of the time through the book telling the backstory. They're not really suspense novels, though,
right.
So it's not fair really to criticize that. But I just think I just do it differently. I go forward, not most of them don't.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Wow, now your next big release is coming up January 30th of 2018, called Beyond Control. Is that part of this Texas trilogy?
No, actually, Beyond Control is the third one. The first one,
okay.
The middle one is Beyond Danger.
Okay.
And that is, Lincoln Kane is the guy in the first book, Lincoln Kane and Carly Drake. And Lincoln Kane is this, you know, I told you, this mega rich, he's such a powerful character. I was actually worried that I wouldn't be able to make another book because he's so dominant in everything. But his partner's name is Bo Reese, and Bo is totally different. He's a former race car driver. He inherited money. He owed Link for taking the blame on this crime, and that's how, when he got out, he got a break from this friend. Anyway, they're best friends, and so now Link handles one side of the business, and Bo handles the other. But it's a murder mystery, and he turned out to be a good character. I wasn't sure how he was going to turn out because he had such terrible competition. You know, he had to stand on his own from the other character. And I think he pulled it off. He's different enough that to interest the reader and not have him thinking, wow, he's not as cool as Link was. Mm-hmm. I think he is in his own way as neat as the other guy, so that was good. And then the third book is Beyond Control, and that's Link's brother, Joshua Kane. So he's the youngest one, and he was an interesting guy to write, too. But I had a harder time with him because he was quieter.
Mm-hmm.
Is that crazy? I mean, it sounds crazy, but it's the truth. They have different personalities. So some of them talk more, some of them talk less. Some are funny, some are not, you know?
You just had a harder time getting to know him.
Yes, I had a harder time getting, and I did a lot of character studies on him just because of it. I worked harder at trying to get a handle on who he was. He was a former special ops guy, so He lives on a ranch, so I hadn't done a ranch book in a while. I really kind of wanted to. I figured Texas was a good place to do it, so that's what I did on that one. But yeah, they all three came out pretty good. I'm happy with them.
Well, sounds like it. And now you have a number of reissues that you've worked on.
Oh God, I don't rewrite them. Some authors do, but I just sort of feel like I did the best I could at the time. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. Maybe it's 10 years or 20 years old even. You know, I've been writing for 30 years. So if it's 10 years old, it's a different setting. You know, I mean, it's a 10-year-old setting if it's a modern book. Mm-hmm. I've never had anybody complain about that. So hopefully, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They don't expect it to be set in today. They don't have digital phones and all of that, cell phones in every one of those books because they didn't have them in some of the early ones.
Oh, I can't even imagine the work involved in reworking that to bring it up to date. It would be a whole new story.
I know some of them that have done it. I know some do it, but I think it might wreck the story in a way because the story happens because of all the circumstances at that time.
Absolutely. It would be a completely different story.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And particularly crime-wise, I do a lot of research for crime. Mm-hmm. The techniques that have developed to solve crimes now are just, oh my God, I have spent half my time trying to figure out how not to get caught because everything catches you. Right? Criminals get away with anything. I really am. You've got facial recognition, you've got DNA, you've got, everything, blood, skin, you can do things with skin, besides fingerprints, there's some other new stuff too. But anyway, you know what I mean? It's very difficult to get away with a crime, so I'm always trying to figure out how to get away with it rather than then I have to figure out how to catch them after I get them. That's a job. So that's my biggest job. Figuring out how to get away with it and then figuring out how to catch them because I did such a good job of them getting away with it.
They got away with it, exactly. So there's a lot of research and a lot of work that goes into these.
Mental work, too, a lot. That's where my big problem is. I'm always trying to think. And then I'll write it out and I'll think, oh, my God, what happened? That's not going to work because they can. And it's usually some new technology. Mm-hmm. Ping the phone. That's a big one.
Yep.
They can find you because they can ping your phone. Everybody's got a cell phone, right? They can figure out right where you are. Now, there's certain things they can only ping to the tower. They can't ping to the person. But they can if you call. So it's complicated to say the least.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, too much work to rework a reissue.
I couldn't anyway. Maybe, like I said, I'm sure some people, they probably have more time than I do, though. I write. I really have been writing two books a year, so that's just my contract, and I don't have any extra time. I actually have two books out next year, and then I have two hardcovers out the following year. It's my first hardcovers in 2019.
Oh, really? What are those about?
I've been setting it all up. That's what I'm working on now, but it's actually going to be set in Dallas. I'm going to keep it in Dallas. That's where my books, the last three, have been, Dallas area, Texas, and I'm going to stay there for a while. I need to get down to Texas and revisit it. I've been there, of course, but I need to get back down there, kind of get it back in my head, since I'm writing so many books set down there.
No, I get that. You have to immerse yourself in the place so that it just, Well, let's talk about your success in the romantic suspense genre. Why are you so successful at it?
I used to say, I like to write men, and I honestly am around men all the time. I'm never around women. I honestly think that has a lot to do with it. I mean, I live in Montana. There's men here. They hunt. They're tough guys, I mean, they're not. They're overprotective, and they're. I think they're the kind of men that a lot of women wish they could find because they're not. Men. It's a different breed than a city guy is, really.
Mm-hmm.
I hate to say that, but it's kind of the truth. That unless they're guys that have get out in the woods or do some sort of masculine stuff. But anyway, I'm so around them so much, it's natural to me to write these kind of guys, and I think the women it appeals to the women, the readers. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, I try to make the women strong enough to handle these guys. That's the other side of it.
You can't
have a strong guy and a wimpy girl woman to take him on.
No, that would not work.
No, you're gonna have one strong girl, you got to have the other one strong.
Exactly.
Sometimes it's actually in the second book. This girl is, in a way, stronger, I think. She's a lady detective and the one coming out beyond danger. That girl is a woman, is a private detective, and she ends up helping him try to clear his name of murder. That's what the story's about. But she was so strong that, she was definitely his equal or more. So, I always have to worry about that, make sure that the female character is as strong as the male,
mm-hmm. Well, let's stick with characters since we're talking about that. And I know you mentioned that before, that you tend to write forward. Do you use any kind of questionnaire to help you get to know them better?
Yeah.
Like what's in your character's refrigerator or on their bedroom floor? How does that work for you?
Yeah, I have a list of questions and I ask myself, you know, where do they live? Where did they go to school? What's their musical interest? What's their political feelings? You know, all those things that a person would... Then you know what they're kind of like. By the time you get through five pages of questions, it's about five pages, you know where their early background, where did they live as a kid, where were they born, you know, all those things. And when you get to the end, you kind of have a person formulated.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what the color of their eyes, what color is their hair. You know, you just basically start with the basics and work it on through. Sometimes I do villains, too. If it's a really big part in the book, then I usually will do a villain.
Mm, interesting.
On there.
Yep.
Because you get to know them as you... A lot of people are better at character development than I am. I mean, if I don't go backwards too much, I always see forward. I always see how they're going to react in a situation rather than what they did as a kid.
Exactly.
And all that stuff.
Right, where they came from. Yep. Now, how do you go about selecting the names of your characters?
Oh, God, I spent hours on it.
I bet.
I'm looking at it right now. It's 2 inches thick. It's 2 inches thick with pages of names.
Oh.
But I have them by nationality. I have them by... You know, like if you're Italian, I have Italian names, Spanish names, contemporary names. I'm looking here, ladies' names, men's names. All, I have a bunch of good names I get are from the rodeos. I get, here's the Wrangler National Finals Rodeo, daily sheet, they call it, but it's a program. And in there is all the cowboy names. And let me tell you, nobody has studlier names than the cowboys, do they?
Oh, give us a few.
Cody and Chase and, you know, like that. So... Yeah, even their last names are pretty macho most of the time.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it's helpful.
Amazing. Well, yeah, and I'm sure, you know, you do have to give some serious thought to the names. They have to be appropriate for that character.
Yeah, actually, I've seen authors, and I always think to myself, I would never do this, but I'm just too lazy, I guess. They use real oddball names, like they'll call a hero Percy.
Oh.
And then they have to spend half the book telling you why it's not like the image that comes in your head, you know. But I think it's too much work. I think if you name the guy right, the first image you have of that person is going to be pretty, you know, you're going to start with a certain, you're going to build on that.
Yes.
You know, if you put some guy named Cody, he's probably Western. I mean, he'd be Western in my books, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or come from a family that was Western. He could be a lawyer now, but he maybe came from that, you know what I mean? It's kind of, whatever the connotation is, I try to work with it instead of against it.
Oh.
Like I said, maybe it's just laziness. I don't know.
No, I think it just makes sense because then you're spending the whole book justifying the guy's name.
Yeah. And women, too. Women are hard. Women are difficult. And you know, you want to use... I try to use names that are... I don't like really weird names. I don't use really weird names on men or women. Mm-hmm. I think it's... You have to work it awful hard. I mean, if it was a... You set a book in Viking time, you're going to have a Viking name.
Sure.
You can't just stick on their Lisa or something like that. So, you know, I try to put... But anyway, yeah, I spend hours. And even sub-characters. I'm kind of... Like villains and stuff, I have to really work. Right now, I'm setting this book. He's going from Texas into the Caribbean to look for somebody. And I've been on there looking for Caribbean names. Well, every island, I'm finding out, has a different kind of name. So, like, Haiti doesn't have the same names as Puerto Rico.
Mm.
No, I mean, it's really interesting. But it's a lot of work because then you kind of got to get the name right with the person that's the bartender or whatever he is. You know, you don't want to just say George.
Exactly. And your readers, I mean, you don't know who is going to be reading your books. And if they are from one of these islands and they have a name that's incongruent to the area, they're going to recognize that as well. So
I'd honestly probably could just make up a word and put it on there. But you know what? Once you start doing that, it's just easy. It's just a trap in a way, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure that a lot of the writers, that's how they get bigger. They get books out so often. Because they don't really check out any of that stuff, and they probably don't check out the criminal parts of it either. I mean, you know, how the fingerprint deals work or some of that stuff. I mean, I think they just kind of slide over it because they're writing a book every 2 months. I mean, how do they do it? I have no clue.
Right.
I can't even imagine it. But they do it. You know, a lot of them do it. So.
Yep. No, I get it. So we've talked about some of your books. What other books should we know about?
Well, the first time I did my last three books before these books, I thought were pretty good. One was Into the Fury, Into the Whirlwind, and then Into the Firestorm. And Firestorm was one of my all-time favorite books. I just loved that guy. I loved the middle one, too, Whirlwind. Well, they were detectives. That's how I came around back to the detective thing. I liked writing those guys. I liked it because the crime, you get started in a hurry because the crime's already been committed, or it's committed in the opening, right? Or it's committed fairly early on in the book. When you write just a regular book, you've got to meet people, you've got to introduce people, you've got to have the crime kind of coming. It has to come. You have to know everybody. You have to know the whole setting before the crime, really. Or you see what I mean? It's a different thing. If you walk into a detective's office and you've got a problem, or you wouldn't be there.
Right.
So you're kind of starting out that way. And I liked that it starts the book so fast and it gets everything rolling in a hurry. So I that's why I did it again. So I had three like that, and I've got four coming out now.
Wow. Do you have a favorite?
One of my favorite books of all time is a Montana story called The Secret. And it's about a rancher up in... I've only written one Montana book because everybody writes Montana. And here I live here. I look out of the mountains. I'm looking at the mountains. I'm looking at the fields. It's green. It's beautiful out here right now. And, I mean, I could do a good job on it, but I don't want to compete with every other writer that doesn't live here that writes it. So mm-hmm. That's why I don't do it. But I've written three set in Alaska that I really like, too. That was my, it was against the wild, against the sky, and against the tide. I had to think about it. But, yeah, I love Alaska, and I've been there several months.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been around Alaska. I love Alaska. So I really wanted to write some books set up there. That was a good one. But, yeah, I like, but contemporaries are my favorite. I love writing the contemporaries. I mean, every time I look up, somebody's got a new series set in Montana. And I'm thinking,
okay, I'll go somewhere else.
Yeah, I go to Wyoming sometimes if I want to do westerns. Or Texas is pretty good for
Texas
that.
Texas is good for that,
I did the one book recently. But now, of course, I'm more suspense-oriented than I was. I'm more suspense-oriented, so I'm looking for more suspense out of the story. And that makes it harder to do just like a western or a... Montana's not a lot of high crime, I mean, we're pretty mellow up here.
Mm-hmm.
So it's harder to do a suspense set up here. I mean, I could do it, but...
No, it's probably easier in Dallas.
Definitely easier in Dallas, I would say.
Yes.
I mean, I did Seattle. Was the first detective agency I did. I did up in Seattle. That was... Because there's tons of crime up there. All kinds of, good stuff. You don't even want to know about. You're doing your research, and I'm thinking, I wish I didn't know that.
No.
It's terrible, but... So anyway, it's an interesting business being a writer.
Absolutely, for sure. So how did publishing your first book change your process of writing, if it did at all?
You just grow as you go along. I mean, I started out, I had no clue. We took a lot of classes in the beginning. Larry and I both did, because we didn't know what we were doing. We just had this idea. He wrote a book. And I really loved it. In fact, it's still out. It's called Shadow of the Mask, and it's just a terrific, terrific book. But he couldn't get it published, and what are we, then I was helping him trying to correct the grammar, right? I was good at grammar, so I was helping him do it. The more I was doing it, I thought, God, and I read a lot. We both were big readers, so I was reading, and I thought, geez, I see how this works now. I kind of saw how it worked, and once I saw how it worked, I thought, geez, I want to try this. I think I could do this. So I started my own book, and that was back in, I hate to even say it, but I was first published in 1988, so a long time ago. Yeah, after the book was, I think it was a terrible book, but people still like it. It still sells really well. It's got like 4.5 stars on Amazon, so I guess it's okay.
Well, sure, you must have done something right.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It's just a different time. People, and styles change, by the way,
mm-hmm.
completely. Oh, and every few years, like maybe say every, not decade, but shorter than that, maybe 7 or, they had the vampires and the shapeshifters and all these crazy things, and
yep.
Now you can't already sell one of those. You couldn't sell one. Cause they don't want to read that anymore. They've read enough of that,
I would imagine that romance, especially suspenseful romance, is pretty true and lasting.
Yeah, it's pretty lasting. That's what I like about it. I think it's, a good murder mystery is always going to be
yes.
something somebody wants to read if you do it right,
yep.
But you're trying to do your best,
Well, you seem so high energy. So when you're writing, does that energize or exhaust you when you're done at the end of the day?
I'm exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, on a good day, I mean, you're kind of a combination. If you really get a good writing day, then you're kind of exhilarated and exhausted.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, it's such a bad day, such a hard day. You get the pages that they don't, you don't know the answer. Like I said, I spend half my time trying to figure out how to get them into trouble and out of trouble.
Interesting.
I just It's so hard. I mean, sometimes it'll keep me awake in the middle of the night thinking, how am I going to solve this? I put this great mystery together, but now I can't figure out how to catch them.
I can't figure it out.
And right now I'm trying to figure out how to figure out where these people are that I'm writing about that are missing. How's he going to know? I mean, I've exhausted he's going to have to get out there and do some legwork, pound on some doors. That's what I figured.
Oh my gosh, this is wild. So tell us about your writing process. You write at home. You've got your own
office. Yeah.
Office. Yes.
As I said, right now I have big, great big windows in my office. I'm looking out in this pasture. But I usually come in, I like to watch the news, because remember, news is new information for you. You know what I mean? You see news, and it gives you new ideas for stories. It might give you some crime information, how they caught somebody, stuff like that. You know, so you've got to kind of educate yourself as you go along. And then
right.
Come in my office, I do my email, which I forgot to do this morning, because I got into writing so quickly. But I don't normally, I do all my email. I'll go do it as soon as I'm off. But I go on Facebook if I can. I like to promo on Facebook as much as I can, but it's hard. You know, it takes up a lot of time, so you don't want to be on there too much.
No, it doesn't. You can get sucked into that.
Oh God. And so I do that a little bit, and then I start writing, and I write till about 6 o'clock, especially in summer. Write later because it's Montana. It's light till after 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like daylight.
Yes.
It looks like Alaska, you know, and it's so bright up here, so you're not really ready to go to bed. You're thinking, well, I might as well work late, you know. So.
Right. Now, do you stop to eat or drink, or are you just writing on through?
No, we take little breaks, you know, all day long. I mean, I have to. A lot of writers eat too much because of that. They they need a break, and so there's no excuse except to go in there and then get some.
Something
I try
to
drink tea, or you know, so I don't indulge my, you know, sweet tooth or something, you know?
Yep.
But, you have to be careful, because when you're sitting this much, you can imagine.
Exactly.
You need to gain weight and stuff. You have to be kind of, I'm a kind of a fitness freak. We work out 3 days a week if it's in town, and in the mornings, so we drive to town, which is 25 miles away, so 50-mile round trip just to go to the gym and back. But it's really worth it as the years go by, you know, you kind of stay. And if I eat in the chair where I'm working, I figured this out. You eat more because you don't remember you're doing it, because you're reading the computer screen. You know, you're working, but you need to get up. Make myself go into the kitchen and sit down and read some. I've got magazines I need to read anyway, so
yep.
I just take those breaks and do that.
Yeah, that should be a rule: no eating at your desk. So that you,
at least once in a while I weaken and do it because I just need to be there. I got too much to do.
Well,
you know? But generally, you eat more.
Yep.
It's crazy if you go in there. You're ready. You just want to get out of there and get back to work, so you eat less. It's just how it is.
Well, we talked a bit. You mentioned Facebook. Do you have any advice for others who are listening about using social media to promote books? You spoke?
I like Facebook because I have a lot of people on Facebook. And I mean, I made it, posted my new cover for Beyond Danger, and I had 85 comments the first day. So, you know, you get a lot of interaction on Facebook. I don't do Twitter. I have a Twitter page, but I don't understand Twitter. I wish I did. I tried to hire somebody to teach me how to work this thing. I mean, I can do a post on it, but I don't understand the benefits. I don't understand how people find things. I just don't get it, so I don't do. And I know it's time consuming anyway, but I don't do Twitter. Mm-hmm. But I do Facebook regularly, so I do that. And then I have tons of email, and then we have a mailing list that has just been wonderful. I have about 30,000 people on my email list. And we email them whenever I have a new book out. We email pretty much once a week for, say, a month, and then once every couple of weeks, and then it gets down to about once a month in between books, because you don't want to bug people.
No.
But I just like to tell them what's going on. If I have a new reissue or something, I'll send out a notice. But it's nice to have that.
Oh,
those
yes.
People, you know?
Yep, to have that base. Well, listen, we have hopped around. We've talked about all kinds of things today. Is there anything we missed, though, that you would like to talk about?
Well, if there's any writers out there, I'll tell you, I'll give you some encouragement. It's really difficult to get published. It's easier now because you can self-publish. You know, everybody can do that. But I think the trick is to finish your book and also to be persistent. You know, it's really a difficult business. My husband was rejected, I don't know how many, probably 100 times in his career before he was really successful. And you hear that, like John Grisham was rejected by all these people. And then, so it's a lot of, it's perseverance. So if you're out there and you're thinking of writing, get your story going, finish it, and persevere to get it published.
Good advice. Thank you for saying that. So where can folks go then to learn more about you, and where can they purchase your books?
Well, they ought to be able to purchase my books anywhere, although sometimes it's hard to find them in the grocery store and stuff like that. But certainly Barnes & Noble or Amazon is my favorite because they just seem like they're so reliable. They always have everything.
Mm-hmm.
But Facebook is the best place to reach me. It's Kat Martin Author. That's what it says. You can tweeting me. Probably won't get to me because I don't know how to get on there really very well. But anyhow, Facebook or... if you go to my webpage, which is katmartin.com, it says contact Kat, and you can always reach me that way too.
Okay.
And that's a great way because I really enjoy getting those direct, you know, really getting. I think Facebook's hard to reply to messages and stuff. I you never know if somebody got it or, you know.
Exactly.
But going to my page is good.
All right, so that is katmartin.com. Well, I know you gave us some advice for authors, but as we head out the door here, any final words before we say goodbye?
Well, I tell you what, I have great readers, and I just appreciate them. I can't even tell you how much. So thank you all for reading my books over so many years.
I love that. KatMartin.com. Kat, what a pleasure to talk with you today and to share you and your wisdom with our listeners. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Pat. I really appreciate it.